Hey everybody, quick one before today's interview, just letting you know, and I put this up as a separate podcast, but I wanted to put it to the start of today's podcast as well. My latest book, Rewire Your Mindset, that came out at Christmas, is now available as an audiobook. So now available on audible.co.uk or audible.com. So if you are similar to me, where you love to listen to your books, I generally go listening audio first. And then even though I've got better at reading physical books over the years, I still prefer audiobooks just because of you can walk with them, cycle with them, drive with them, etc. Maybe not now with COVID, but when you're driving, they're a great way, or commuting, they're a great thing to listen to. Anyways, the book's on Audible. It's on audio. For those of you who love audiobooks, I'm just letting you know that you can get it now. I'll link it in the description for today's episode. Just click onto audible.co.uk, audible.com, and check it out. If you've already listened to the audiobook and you enjoyed it, please leave a review or a rating on Audible as well. That'd be super helpful, especially if you enjoyed the book. Just let me know how you found it, just because it helps with that Audible algorithm on audible.com and audible.co.uk. I've said Audible a lot today. Anyways, podcast. Enjoy. Rewire Your Mindset audiobook now on Audible. Go check it out and enjoy today's episode. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the books, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests in all things health, fitness and mindset. Today's guest is Emma Doherty. So Emma Fit UK, for those of you following her on Instagram. And this is a super enjoyable conversation. We get into some incredible topics, and Emma gives some amazing tips for people who are trying to improve their relationship with food. As someone that has overcame disordered eating, binge eating, and cycles of all or nothing approaches to her diet, and now uses her platforms to promote a positive message on body image and a positive message on building a healthier relationship with food. So I'm going to keep this introduction super short. Today's episode, we cover things from journaling perception on the foods you're eating to overcome a fearful relationship with food, how to overcome the all or nothing food approach, binge eating, etc., dealing with cravings, stress management, mistakes people make on a fat loss journey, and so much more. This is a must listen if you are a female on a weight loss or a fat loss journey. If you're outside of that demographic, you're still hopefully going to enjoy it, because Emma's super well spoken and gives some great tips on things like stress management, relationships with food in general, and food tips and training advice that hopefully you get loads, regardless of whether you're male, female, older, younger. I loved this conversation. We will definitely do a round two in the future. So keeping with a super short introduction today, here's today's guest, Emma Doherty, aka Emma Fit UK, on overcoming a fearful relationship with food. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am delighted to be joined today with my guest, Emma Doherty. Emma is a level 3 certified personal trainer and online fitness and nutrition coach. She helps girls across the world achieve their greatest bodies whilst developing a healthy mindset towards fitness and nutrition. Known as Emma Fit UK on Instagram, she puts out incredible content geared around her online message of helping females get strong and look their best whilst eating foods they love. I'm looking forward to talking all things women's fitness, nutrition and mindset in today's episode. Emma, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been honestly so excited to come on. I've been a big fan for many years.
Oh, thanks so much. And we said this just before we went on air, I absolutely love the amount of content you put out and the amount of value you're providing people. I've been following your Instagram for ages, as you know, and you put out great content. But when I dived into your blog, onto the website, there's just so much value. So I'm really looking forward to this talk. Can you tell everybody listening that who may not be familiar with you just a little bit about yourself, your backstory, where you're from, and just a little bit on what got you into the world of fitness in general? What got you started?
Yeah, sure. So I'm 23. I live in Bath in the UK. Trying to think how to start, really. I mean, I grew up as a dancer. I did a lot of dance. So every night of the week, I did kind of everything from contemporary, ballet, tap, all of that sort of thing. And then when I started secondary school, I kind of let my dance kind of slip and I stopped kind of exercising. Unfortunately, I did get bullied in school, and it turned into quite a negative experience. I had to leave school and I got homeschooled for a while. And this kind of led to me not really doing any exercise. I was quite kind of housebound. I turned to kind of poor eating habits. And yeah, I was kind of in a pretty bad place mentally. And this is kind of how I got into fitness. I kind of found that it really helped me with my low mood, my depression, my anxiety. And it really did kind of save me from going down quite a bad kind of route down that kind of avenue of mental health. Yeah, I started going to the gym. I started off in a very, very small kind of box gym. It was actually in a hospital. It was tiny. It literally just had like a couple of treadmills and a squat rack. And I started going by myself, kind of following like Pinterest workouts back in the day. And it absolutely changed my perception of kind of what it takes to be happy, if that makes sense. Like it really brought all kind of positive areas to my life. And then the body composition improvements just kind of came as a byproduct.
One of the things I want to pull back for sure is your mental health side of things that you talk about. And I love that you cover this on your content as well. When you started training, did you go straight into weight training, or was it a kind of a cardio step in where you started running on treadmills, cross trainers, etc., and then transitioned out? And the reason I ask that is because you look like you've been training for years in terms of your body composition, the way it's structured. I know that it comes down to a combination of hard work and genetics, etc., but I'm curious your introduction to it. Did you go straight into resistance and weight training, or was that a kind of a step-by-step process?
Actually, I kind of did go straight into weight training, which I know is actually quite different to how most females get into it. I know a lot of girls will, you know, start as a bit of a cardio bunny. But no, I joined a very, very small gym. So I was quite lucky in the sense I didn't kind of have that gym intimidation. And so I would just follow kind of Pinterest workouts and kind of teach myself with, I had absolutely no idea back in the day, but I would do, you know, like bicep curls and all sorts of stuff with dumbbells just to kind of, you know, learn the way. But I guess, like I said, I had the benefit of kind of having a very small gym to do it in, and I wasn't really intimidated with like lots of people watching.
The mental health benefits that came from exercise, was that down to the endorphins you were getting, or was it a confidence building thing, or was it something different? What was the, because, and the reason I ask this question is because one of the reasons I do endurance events is that it really helps me with my mental health side of things, more so than even just normal training, because it pushes me mentally and physically. But when you joined the gym and started doing the resistance training, the bicep curls, etc., but you were doing a lot of other things too, what was the mental health benefit coming from? Do you put it down to the confidence that it was building, or the endorphin release, or was it something completely different?
It was a combination of all of them, to be honest. I think initially it was having a kind of meditation in a way, like where you can just forget all of your stresses and just go into the gym and focus on you. And yeah, I really did kind of see it as like a way to almost meditate. It was really mind, like a type of mindfulness, really. And then on top of that, after a workout, I'd get such a big rush of endorphins. I'd feel really accomplished. I'd feel like I've achieved something. And then later on, as obviously you've said, it does take quite a long time to actually see your body change. But eventually that became a huge kind of body confidence boosting factor. And the more you get that kind of feedback loop where you're seeing positive changes, and then you're also still getting the mindset benefits from it.
What does your training look like now in comparison to when you started? It's obviously completely different, and I know you documented on your Instagram, but is there any one, two, or three points that jump out that you wish you had just started with, as opposed to, you know, you used the bicep curls as an example, which is a great move, but probably not, shouldn't be 80% of anyone's programs, even though a lot of guys that are listening to this are like, yeah, I'm going to just do bicep day. But is there, what does your training look like now compared to what it looked like when you started?
So when I started, kind of on that note, it was very much a typical bro split. I would go in and kind of have an arm day, a shoulder day, a back day, a leg day. And now it's very much tailored to my goals and what I kind of want to focus on and bring up in terms of body parts. But I also now have an upper lower split. So I will train legs and glutes 3 times a week, and then I'll train my upper body 2x a week. And that way I'm just hitting each muscle part more frequently across the week, which is one of the best ways to kind of build muscle. And frequency of your training is one of the key things to seeing impressive body composition results. If you're hitting a body part hard once a week and then letting it recover, you would see a far more benefit from going in, you know, 3 or 4 times a week and hitting it with a little less intensity, but, you know, hitting the muscle more often. So I kind of adopt that with my own training. And also back in the day, I used to spend far too long in the gym. I would go and hammer my legs for about 2 hours and then not be able to walk for about 4 days. So now it's a lot more focused, and I follow a program. So I go into the gym and I'll spend approximately an hour.
Which transitions perfectly into what I want to cover next, which is the nutrition side of things. And you talk quite a lot around nutrition, diet, etc. on your channels, particularly Instagram. I think your Instagram content is fantastic for this. But one of the questions I want to ask you is, a combination, because I do want to get into your nutrition, but I know that you document, even one of your recent Instagram posts was talking about exactly what you're doing, and you lay it all out in terms of your meals, etc. But when it comes to nutrition, and you're helping a lot of clients, and one of the things I wanted to talk to you today was about the diet side for females in particular. And you work with a lot of clients in your online programs, which we'll, you know, mention, I'll link to in the show notes for everybody listening. But the nutrition mistakes you see with clients, is there any ones that you see that come up regularly, or any nutritional mistakes that you see regularly with people that you once made yourself?
I think it's definitely going to have to be the all or nothing approach. And I did used to kind of fall into this trap myself back in the day, where females, clients, they will kind of deem certain foods as off limits and really bad, and they'll stay away from them, and then kind of enforce this really strict, rigid meal plan and assume that they have to eat just like, you know, chicken and broccoli to get results, when actually that's just going to increase your cravings and make you more likely to, you know, fall off the wagon, or whatever you want to call it. It's a lot more sustainable to take a more consistent approach of including all of your favorite foods. You know, there's nothing wrong with eating chocolate or ice cream, as long as it's in moderation and you're factoring it into your diet. It's much better to take that approach than, you know, cut all foods out and demonize certain foods and then, you know, end up binging on it when you are craving it so badly.
Is that all or nothing approach? That's obviously, because you mentioned it there, is that, or the language that you put on it, was that one of the mistakes you had in the beginning and had to overcome in terms of where you're at now with that moderation and that consistency and that sustainability approach, which is a lot of what you preach on your Instagram? Is that, having been an all or nothing person in the past yourself and having to overcome it yourself?
Yeah, definitely. It's something I really, really struggled with, actually. Back in the beginning, I kind of had the mindset that if I just don't eat the chocolate, if I just don't eat the ice cream, then I'll see better progress because I'll be, you know, consuming less calories. But actually, it ended up me falling into a trap of binge eating disorder, and I had a very fragile relationship with food for quite a while, and it's something I had to work really hard on overcoming. And as soon as I started incorporating more of my favorite foods into my diet and you know, taking a more balanced approach to my nutrition and not seeing it as having to be on track 24/7, I started to see far better results. I had a much more improved relationship with food. I didn't fear food anymore. And yeah, like I say, I saw much better body composition improvements as well.
When you started to overcome that initially, and there's a lot of people listening to this podcast who are in a similar boat at some stage of that journey, either at the beginning where they still have a poor relationship with food. And this is why I love that you're talking about it on, you know, the podcast, but on your platforms as well, because it's so helpful for people to see and understand somebody else who's been through it and came out the other side. But when you were doing that and coming out the other side, and you mentioned including foods you enjoyed, etc., how did you remember, if you can recall, how did you get over that fear of food or that guilt that initially comes with reintroducing those foods that you like? Because the pattern normally is I take away ice cream, I take away chocolate, and then you eat it, even though you know it's going to help you and it's in a calorie control plan, etc. You still feel that guilt or the fear of food, which is the language you used. How did you get over that initial feeling that when you started to reintroduce those foods, if you can recall?
So I did actually use a journaling technique, which is something that I get a lot of my clients to do if they're struggling with this. So actually just write down your perceptions of that food and to write down why you think it's so inherently bad. And whenever you get these feelings of guilt for eating them, like just document it, write it down, and then it makes you make logical sense of it. Like, if you're eating some chocolate, it's not actually going to make you fat. Just writing it down on paper and getting your thoughts down on paper can really help you rationalize it. And then from that, I kind of just made myself, I was like, look, like I don't want to have this fearful relationship of food. I want to be able to have a healthy, balanced approach in my eating. I want to be able to go out and enjoy meals with my friends and my boyfriend. And I don't want to live my life kind of being scared of eating, you know, a pizza every once in a while. So I forced myself to take a more balanced approach, and I allowed myself to have, you know, a little bit of chocolate here and there. And slowly, gradually over time, it just became a much more sustainable and balanced approach. And yeah, it's something I live by now.
That's a fantastic tip about journaling the perception of that food. I think that's so helpful for people who are going through it. I'm curious, because you mentioned your boyfriend there, and I know you're close with your family and close with him. When you were going through this initially, I'm not sure of how long you were together, etc., but did you share your relationship with food or the poor relationship with food with those around you? Or was it something that you dealt with yourself, hence the journaling, or was it a combination of the two?
If I'm honest, it was something that I did kind of deal with by myself. I kept it very kind of close to me because I know a lot of girls, they can feel embarrassed and they can feel alone if they have these kind of perceptions around food, or if they feel kind of out of control around food. I know a lot of girls, including myself, you can feel quite isolated and alone. But I just want to put it out here now that you're not alone. Like, if you're suffering with this, so many girls feel the same, and it's just not spoken about, which is why unfortunately a lot of people feel so like lonely and like they can't speak to other people about it. So yeah, unfortunately it was something I kept to myself and I worked through by myself, but I kind of use my platform now to talk about it and to hopefully help other people overcome it. Because yeah, I know how much it can consume your life.
Yeah. And I think one of the most important things on your platform and you talking about it is what happens to a lot of us, myself included. Now, thankfully, in terms of food relationship, mine hasn't been that terrible, but I've had issues with my own mental health and anxiety that I've talked about in the podcast, is you kind of put yourself in this self-imposed prison and you think you're the only one going through it, and you don't want to either share it from embarrassment or share it because you're like, well, who cares? And sometimes that's not the best approach. By all means, you know, Emma, you've came out the other side and journaling, and it helped, and to be honest, a lot of my own mental health issues, I came through myself. I didn't share them with people. I'm like, this is your problem. This is your cross. You bear it. Where that's not necessarily the best approach in hindsight, looking back. But I'm curious, and this may be a completely different direction to that of sharing it with people, but if you could go back to when you were handling that first and you started journaling and coming through and nearly having a rewiring yourself to have a different association with food, is there something that you wish you had known back then that you know now? Or for somebody in a similar position right now, is there one piece of advice or one tip that you would offer them that could potentially compound positively over time if they were to implement it now?
I would say, looking back, I wish I had reached out for help. I wish I had, invested in a coach or told someone, like a family member or a friend. You know, I think it is so important to have that support network and that accountability and that a relationship where you can confide and, you know, get the support to work through it. If you are struggling, just don't keep it to yourself. Talk to someone and try and get help. I think that would be the best piece of advice I can give.
I think that's fantastic. That sometimes, you know, sharing a problem with somebody, particularly if it's the right person, a coach that can keep you accountable, or someone you can just discuss it with, a family member or a friend, sometimes that can be enough to kind of just pull you out, and it can help with the accountability. And that kind of segues in with a question I wanted to ask you. And I didn't know how to get around to this, because there's a million ways to ask it. But because you're 23, Emma, and your content, and I've been following your Instagram for ages. I was diving into your blog and into your content when I was researching this podcast even more. And you're so knowledgeable, and the way you put across information is just, there's so much. Like some of your recent Instagrams about, you know, about nighttime eating, about 7 things you do to set up your week for productivity, how to eat healthy, stick to your diet when your boyfriend, housemate, or family member doesn't want to. Like, you have all these topics that are super in depth, and you have a very good way of putting across your message. And I'm really curious, to someone that's 23, how do you learn, or where do you consume your information that allows you to help and serve so many people in the way that you do? And the reason I ask that question is because if you were 33, you know, I'd be like, yeah, it makes sense. You know, you've been around doing things for ages, but you're wise beyond your years, for the lack of a better way of saying it, because your content is so valuable that you put out. But where do you consume your information that allows you to process it and support and serve all the people that you do?
Oh, thank you. Back when I started, I fell in love with fitness, nutrition, and but more importantly, I fell in love about learning about it. Like, I absolutely loved, you know, going home and researching. I'd spend all my time kind of reading books and Googling and reading articles and listening to podcasts, yours included. I love soaking up all this information and reading about it and expanding my knowledge. And I've been doing that for the past 4 years now. I read a lot of books. I consume a lot of health and fitness podcasts. I enjoy reading articles. And I guess over time, like, it's like a compound effect. It builds up and, you know, and then you have a much better understanding and education of everything, and then it all kind of, you know, molds together, and you just have a really in-depth take on everything. And then on top of that, obviously working with clients, I have learned a monumental amount of information from just working with people. Another thing that I recommend for any personal trainers or coaches who are listening, I am subscribed to a monthly research review. It's by Stronger by Science, and they basically interpret the latest training and nutrition research, and they break it down so that it's really easy to understand. So I don't know if you've heard of Eric Helms and Greg Knuckles, but all of their research, they break it down, and then it's there for coaches to, you know, read and then implement with their clients. So I learn a lot of the latest research from them.
That makes a lot of sense. That's a fantastic resource. I've sent a few personal trainers to that as well, particularly for people who apply that evidence-based approach. I think it simplifies it in a very easy to understand way, as you said. You mentioned books there, and I'm a big reader and something that I love, and I'm always curious because everyone has different books that they're a fan of. But when it comes to one that's had a positive impact on you recently in the last, say, 12 to 18 months, and this may be a health book, it may be a fitness book, it may be a personal development book, it may be something completely different, but is there any book that comes to mind or one that you have sent several of your friends or followers to that you got a lot from and you were able to really connect with the message? When I say that, does any book jump to mind?
Yes, I've got two. The first one is something that has really benefited me and my life. And it's not a very long book either. So it's The One Thing. I don't know if you've read it.
I have. It's on my, I'm currently, by the time this podcast goes out, actually, it'll be on my website, my top 50 books. That's in the top 20, definitely.
Yeah, it's an incredible book. I literally read it in about 2 days. There are just so many incredible takeaways from it about willpower and motivation and focus. And, you know, it's kind of in the title of the book, The One Thing, but the value of just focusing on one thing and becoming an expert at it and getting rid of distraction, all of those sorts of things. There's so many tangible takeaways from that book. So yeah, I definitely recommend that. And then another book that I would recommend, especially to your listeners who are interested in perhaps venturing into a career in the health and fitness industry, is Changemaker by John Berardi. He is the founder of Precision Nutrition, and it's essentially like a toolkit. It's a really useful book for people who want to work in the health and fitness industry but aren't really sure what route to go down. It's an incredible book that really touches on some of the psychological, behavioral elements of coaching, which I think a lot of coaches might disregard and not kind of place enough importance on. I got a lot of value out of that book, and it's really, really helped me with my coaching principles today. So yeah, that's definitely a good one.
What was the name of that book again, Emma? I haven't read that one.
Changemaker.
Fantastic. I'm just making note of it here beside me. Yeah, I read Gary Kelleher's The One Thing. It's a phenomenal book. I've got a whole course module on my online business course on focusing on your one thing for productivity. It's just been an absolute game changer for me personally as well. I must check out that book as well. It sounds like a very, very good resource that would allow personal trainers and coaches, just as you said, focus on that psychological side, which is, you know, more than anybody, that's such a huge part, because a lot of people know they should eat better, they know they should move more, but there's behavioral and psychological reasons to why they can't. And I think as trainers and coaches, and this is why you're able to serve your community and your clients so well, because you can kind of dig in deeper to figuring out why people can't adhere, etc. I think that's so important as a coach and as a trainer. You work with a lot of people, and I know it's majority females, and your message, even though, like, I follow your content as a guy, I think you put up great stuff, like even in terms of your productivity tips, your 7 things you do on a Sunday, that one jumped out at me, because as soon as you mentioned The One Thing by Gary Keller, I'm like, yeah, I can see where that productivity kind of gene is coming through in your content. But is there any major red flags that you see when you're either working directly with clients or you see coming through your social media? Because you have a huge reach on Instagram, you know, 100,000s and hundreds of thousands, 100, I can't remember the exact number, but it's well up in the 119,000, is it 119,000 followers? Something.
Oh, something like that.
Yeah, it's something high. Like I'm not great on follower count. I never check mine or check other people's. I'm like, oh, it doesn't really matter. But when it comes to people messaging you, I know that you're really good with DMs, replying to people, etc. Is there any red flags that you normally see, either mindset wise or diet wise or fitness wise, with either the people that you're working with or the DMs or the people you're replying to? Is there a common trend or a common red flag that comes up regularly that is a misconception that people have that you have to regularly address on your channel?
I wouldn't say it's a misconception, but something that is very common in my DMs and also with my coaching inquiries and a lot of my clients actually, is that they a lot of the time females, they want to lose fat, they want to start a diet, but they're only kind of consuming 1,300, 1,400 calories, and they want to then start a fat loss journey. And I always tell them, like, you just cannot start a fat loss phase on that little calories. And a lot of the time you have to work on your metabolism and go through a process of reverse dieting before you can actually start thinking about going into a calorie deficit. It's just so prevalent. So many girls are under eating and not eating enough at all to, you know, even fuel basic human functions, let alone start a diet and cut their calories and start doing loads of cardio.
When you mentioned reverse dieting there, and that's such a great point that I don't think I've covered that much on this podcast, that if you're coming into a program on a very calorie restricted diet, it's very difficult to go into a further fat loss phase because you need to change up. Normally you have to do something with people's training and lifestyle because you can't really cut calories any further for the most part. Would you, in that context, where if somebody came to you that was eating, let's say 1300 calories, just for example, and they wanted to lose fat, would you realign their expectations to maybe reverse diet out and then restart a fat loss journey? Or would you keep their calories at that level and then add in different training protocols and then gradually try and bring them out or change their goal into, you know, toning up, building muscle, etc., whatever language you want to put on it? What would be your process? I know everyone's individual, but what would be your process for that? What would be your advice for people who want to lose fat, who are already on that low calorie plan and are considering, you know, working with you, working with another coach, working with me, working with whoever? What would you advise them on there?
So my coaching philosophy is very much about it being sustainable and enjoyable so that you could actually make it into a lifestyle change rather than just, you know, an 8-week diet. So I will always encourage them to, you know, go through a period of reverse dieting, increasing their calories, working up their food so that they're eating enough to, you know, feel energized and enjoy their workouts and eat foods they enjoy. And actually a lot of the time when I do this with my clients, which you'll be able to see, I put up a lot of case studies on my client Instagram. A lot of the time females are going to see incredible body composition improvements from eating more, as long as it is tailored towards a well-structured training program and you're doing that alongside the incremental increases in food. And as well, it doesn't mean, you know, going from 1300 calories right up to 2000 calories. It's a very, very slow, gradual, incremental increase in calories each week whilst, you know, focusing on your strength and your performance in the gym and building muscle. And yeah, like I say, a lot of the time my clients will be dropping body fat, seeing their waist measurements improve and their progress pictures start to look better from going through this process. So yeah, it can actually sometimes allow them to reach their goal of losing fat whilst also ending up able to eat more calories.
When you made such a great point there that I want to pull back, that sometimes, as you said, when you adapt your training and you're training more intensely, you're obviously going to be able to handle that increase in calories and your body will, you know, still burn through it like crazy if you're training hard. But is there any, and this may be the answer, but there might be another one, is there any other low-hanging fruits or training philosophies or nutritional philosophies that... So for example, before I kind of dive into this question, what I would normally tell people, particularly when it's weight loss being their goal, I'm like, well, calories in, calories out, number one, it's just bread and butter pyramid of prioritization. But something else people miss out on when it comes to something like a low hanging fruit is I'm like, just move more. I'm like, just, you know, try and hit your 10,000 steps a day if you can, maybe not on lockdown, but in, you know, generally walk more, take the stairs versus the lift, like all of these low hanging fruits that can be very helpful for people. Do you have any of those, or is the one you put the focus on to train super intensely so you can handle more calories? Or is there anything else like sleep requirements or nutritional based or anything, time restricted eating, that you're like, this works well for people? It's a kind of a low hanging fruit that a lot of people can apply and it works for them. Or is training the one that jumps to mind?
Yeah, I would say actually the kind of things that people overlook, like your step count and your sleep and your stress, they're they're, you know, a lot of the time they're far more important than your training intensity. All of my followers and my clients will know I'm a huge advocate of hitting a step count. I encourage all of my clients to hit 10,000, if not more, steps per day. And a lot of the time, if someone starts coaching with me and they're only kind of walking 3,000-4,000 steps a day, by increasing that alone, they're going to see an incredible difference in their body composition because their energy expenditure is just going up. And yeah, so steps is a huge important factor, and it's something I've really changed my mind upon. If you'd said to me, you know, a couple of years ago, like, oh, I went for a walk for my exercise, I'd kind of probably like roll my eyes and think, oh, that's not exercise, when actually it's so important to hit a step count, and it's going to be increasing your BMR, and not only that, but your total daily energy expenditure. Not only that, but it's also great for stress management. I find going out for a walk every morning really sets me up good for the day. I just feel so much more, you know, refreshed and just in a better place mindset wise. And then also on that sleep, I think a lot of people overlook the importance of sleep. For me and a lot of my clients, if you're getting inadequate sleep, your hunger hormones are going to be out of whack. You're going to have really bad cravings. You're not going to be adhering to your nutrition plan. You're not going to have optimal results if you're not prioritizing your sleep, your stress, and your movement.
I'm definitely going to double back on the stress management, but I want to touch on sleep for a second. How are you as a sleeper generally, personally?
Yeah, I'm good. I go through phases. So sometimes I have weeks of really, really great sleep. And then other times it's usually when I'm feeling quite stressed, my sleep isn't so great. But I do have like a bedtime routine that really helps me. So I take a 5-HTP supplement about an hour before bed. I also have a passion flower tea, because passion flower, it is basically a precursor to the neurotransmitter GABA. And essentially it will just calm down your brain activity and help you relax a little more. So I have one of them, and then I read a physical book in bed for about 20-30 minutes, and then that helps me have a really good sleep. So I make sure I stick to that most of the time.
Yeah, that's a very potent combo of anything that's going to work as a precursor for GABA to relax your central nervous system, and 5-HTP, for anyone unfamiliar, is just tryptophan that crosses the blood-brain barrier that releases serotonin, so you'll feel more relaxed going to bed. Two really, really good things to combine. And you mentioned, and it kind of ties into the stress, which I want to double back on, you mentioned those supplements are obviously going to help for stress management as well. GABA particularly, anything that's a precursor or direct GABA is really, really good from my experience. But you mentioned walking for stress management. Do you have any other stress management tools that you'll go to, particularly on those weeks that, you know, some weeks we all have them where there's just seems to be more things going on than not, and it's like life just seems to be going too quickly. Do you have any other go-to stress management techniques?
So I have been pretty stressed out lately because I'm in the process of writing my dissertation. So I'm alongside my job. So I'm pretty stressed out at the moment. So I have been recently using Headspace. I never used to be into meditation, and I kind of always turn my nose up at it, but it has really, really helped me. So I literally just spend 5 minutes, sometimes 10 minutes every morning, just listening to a guided meditation, and it has honestly really, really helped me. And then also, like I said, going outside for walks, being in nature really helps me. Just, you know, literally just going to the park and sitting on a bench and just not doing anything, just being quiet in your mind and thinking, or calling a friend, just doing things that you enjoy where you're not, you know, constantly overwhelming yourself with work or scrolling on social media, just getting away from all of the busy stresses in your life and just giving yourself some time to chill out.
Do you have some form of social media digital detox? Like, is the morning time off social media, or do you have any protocol around that? Is that a religious thing where you don't go on it until a certain time? And just, I bring it up because you mentioned there where you can kind of disconnect on a bench and just chill out in nature. Is that a structured thing, or do you just do that by day based on how you feel?
Yeah, so I like to basically control the first 30 minutes in the morning and the last 30 minutes at night. And so that means when I wake up in the morning, I would pick up my phone. I don't even go near it for probably a good hour. And then when I'm on a walk, I don't go on my phone. I will either do a walk-in meditation, or I'll listen to a podcast, or I'll call a friend. I won't just be, you know, scrolling on my phone. And then again at night, I don't scroll on my phone. I don't let myself go on my phone for a good 45 minutes before bed. I just find I don't sleep well at all if I do.
Yeah, that's I'm exactly the same. I've got that cut hour, an hour minimum before first thing in the morning and before bed, where it's like no social media, no phone. Yeah, like your mental peace is just like, it just jacks up to the nine. You're like, oh, I'm not as stressed out as scrolling through, even though TikTok. Are you on TikTok?
I'm not, no. I've deliberately not downloaded it because I'm scared I'll get like trapped and we'll find it too difficult to get off it.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I was literally, before we got on this call, the most unproductive. I'm like, Gary Kelleher from The One Thing would be like chopping my head off, if you heard. I was literally trying to record a TikTok and it took about an hour. I'm like, this will take 10 minutes. And it took me like an hour. I'm like, man, this is just a time suck. But at least I got a video out at the end of it. But it's fantastic. But the reason I say that is that's the one platform that can sometimes catch me an hour before bed, and then you go down this rabbit hole. It's like YouTube of 4 years ago. So yeah, just be mindful. If you join it, learn from my mistake. Make sure you apply that protocol to TikTok as well. Emma, I just have a couple of more things that I want to touch on with you. And I know the world's a bit crazy at the minute with lockdown. I know in the UK, it's a little bit lighter than it is here in Ireland. In Ireland, it's still on pretty heavy lockdown. But I'm curious, because of the amount of things you're doing, the amount of content you're putting out, the business, working with people, dissertation, etc. What's the thing that you're doing right now that you're most excited about?
I would say I am most excited to finally finish uni and graduate from uni so that I can invest all of my time, my effort, my energy into my coaching and all of my clients. And I'm really excited because next week I am actually going to be launching my own coaching app for my clients. So all of their nutrition plans and their training programs and our chats and our lessons will be on the app. So yeah, I'm really, really excited about that.
Where is that app going to be available? Through the App Store, or is it going to be through Empower Online Coaching, your website?
So it is going to be available on the App Store, but yeah, it is going to be an app for my Empower Online Coaching clients.
Love it. And there's one more topic that I want to cover just before we tell people where they can connect with you. And I wanted to double back on this slightly because you talk about this a little bit, and it was something I wanted to cover earlier in the podcast, but I want to finish up on it because I think it will be a nice little roundup to an awesome conversation I've been dying to connect for ages. And that's cravings. And I know you work predominantly with females, but this is for guys too, because cravings, apart from, you know, menstrual cycle, time of the month, etc., there's a lot of overlap. When it comes to either your personal cravings or dealing with clients, do you have any kind of go-tos that you use? Either, so for example, my approach is, I'm a big believer in have the food that you want, but have it because you want it, not because you need it. Meaning that if your overall nutrition is good and you've got good nutrient-dense foods where you're not deficient in any vitamins, minerals, etc., for the most part, assuming there's no underlying genetic issue, you're going to be able to have your chocolate and ice cream because you want it, not because you physically need it because you haven't slept, or there's lifestyle factors, or those hormones you mentioned earlier, you know, leptin, ghrelin, the ones that get down regulated when you sleep. When it comes to cravings, what's your approach, either personally or with clients, or if it's the same, you can share that. What would you, or how do you apply, or what's your philosophy towards it?
So a lot of the time it just comes down to finding alternatives that can satisfy your sweet tooth or your cravings that aren't so calorie dense. So swapping full fat Ben and Jerry's ice cream for Halo's Hot, which is going to be like 300 calories instead of 2000 calories. Trading, if you're on a lower carb diet, perhaps trading pasta or spaghetti for butternut squash or courgette noodles. And then other things like I have a huge sweet tooth, so I have a Options or Highlights hot chocolate, which is like a 40 calorie hot chocolate. That really helps me. And then like sugar-free jellies, if you're on a diet and you've got huge sweet cravings, things like that can really, really help with your cravings. But also another thing that I just wanted to touch on, because it really helps me stay on track when I'm dieting, is I do intermittent fasting. And it's because in the morning my willpower and my adherence to nutrition is pretty high, and then towards the end of the day it kind of tapers down, and I'm more likely to want to, have some chocolate or not stick to my meal plan. And I find saving calories for a bit later in the day when my appetite is higher really helps me stay on track.
Do you just skip breakfast, or do you go straight through until evening time when you do those intermittent fasts?
I usually start eating about midday, 1 o'clock, sometimes a little bit later. I kind of listen to how I feel. If I'm really, really hungry, then I'll have something to eat. But usually I don't really get hungry until about midday.
Yeah, that's a very good tool to have in your arsenal for, like, one of the misconceptions people have is like intermittent fasting, and it has been proven it's really effective for fat loss in terms of fat metabolism, fat adaption, etc. But for the majority of people, it makes sense to save your calories for later in the day when you're hungry, and it can be a very effective tool. Do you use that, just to ask one final question on the fasting, is that just when you're dieting, or is that something that you apply year round?
It does tend to just be when I'm dieting, really. And as well, on that note, I think it can be a really useful strategy to use if you're going to be going out for food with your friends or your family and you want to save calories for a meal out. It's something that I recommend a lot of my clients do. If they want to have a pizza on a Friday night to hold back their first meal until about midday, and then make sure they're having a higher protein snack and lunch, and then they've got kind of more carbs and fats for the evening meal. But yeah, to answer your question, I only really do it when I'm dieting.
Yeah, using it as a tool, like a tool in your arsenal, it's just a fantastic thing to have. And for anybody listening, it's worth experimenting with just to see how your body feels. But for some people, as exactly as you mentioned, events may not work for everybody for year round. It's one thing that you can apply in a strategy that you can apply that could potentially help you get leaner, lose body fat, etc. You know, or in the case of having a pizza in the evening, to bank some of those calories for later in the day. Last question. And because this is something I normally finish up on the podcast with, but I want to kind of double it back to an age range which is slightly younger than I would normally ask this. And I suppose I want to bring it back to, as someone that's came through being bullied, and I get this because I wrote about this in my last book. I was bullied as well when I was in school, and I put a lot of my, probably a lot of my physical appearance down to the fact that I was bullied. I'm like, I'm just going to get big and strong and no one will fucking bully me. But so I'm like, I owe those people. I'm like, it's partly one of the reasons I was joined the gym. But if you could go back to your teenage self, what advice would you say to her? What message would you give her? Or I know sometimes it's a little bit of a butterfly effect. You never want to go back and offer advice in case it changes the path, because you wouldn't be on the path you're on now. And I get that. But if there was somebody in a similar position, what advice would you offer them, or what would you say to that person?
I would definitely just say, at the end of the day, you've got to do what you enjoy and what gives you fulfillment and passion, and never stop doing what you want to do because of what other people think about you or what other people say about you. I mean, even in terms of like my Instagram, I'm sure when I first started posting fitness stuff back in the day, people would, talk about me behind my back. But at the end of the day, people are going to talk about you regardless. So you might as well do what brings you happiness and what you enjoy. But also, going back to what you were just saying, I have recently started reframing all kind of all kind of types of adversity in a more positive manner. Because like you say, if I hadn't got bullied and in school, I actually got called a whale and things like that. And although I might have not had the best intentions at first with exercise, I mean, I probably went into it with a bad attitude, kind of wanted to change my body because of those comments. If I hadn't found exercise, I wouldn't have the job I have today, and I wouldn't have fallen in love with it, and I wouldn't have this as my passion now. So yeah, you're right, the negative kind of experiences we go through can always end up being a positive in the long run.
Oh, what a fantastic way to finish, Emma. For everybody listening, I highly recommend you go check out Emma's content. And I've been following for so long. Can you tell Emma, everybody listening, where is the best place for them to connect with you, to reach out for coaching, or where to follow you online?
So my Instagram is emmafituk_, and then my website is empoweronlinecoaching.com.
And for everybody listening, I will link those in the show notes. You can click on them in the description, or you can check out the show notes on briankeenfitness.com. Emma, this has been an awesome conversation. Keep doing what you're doing, spreading the positivity, spreading the vibes. I absolutely love it. And thank you so much again.
Thank you so much for having me.
And there you have it. There we go. That girl is absolutely wise beyond her years. I really, really enjoyed this conversation, and hopefully you did too. Also, just on top of what I mentioned in the ad at the start of today's podcast, my new book, or my latest book, Rewire Your Mindset, is now available on audible.co.uk or audible.com. I'll link that in the description for anyone that wants to go check out that book if you prefer audio. And as always, if you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a rating or a review wherever you are, and hit that subscribe button for episodes coming every single Monday, and bonus episodes not every Friday, whenever I have a bonus episode, but episodes coming every Monday. So hopefully you enjoyed, and I'll catch you all next week.